issue of the newsletter, and I found that there is some connection to all three of the speakers in tonight's session. Our first speaker is Helen Martin from Unionville, Pennsylvania High School, and in fact, there's even a story about her on the first page of the August-September newsletter, so you'd be able to go back if it hadn't gotten to your house before you left to come here and read about it. Helen was a winner of a competition at the 1986 National Science Teachers Association convention in San Francisco in describing a project of using weather satellites to teach students in her classrooms, who I gather even built the receiver that they used to collect the data. And she is going to speak to us tonight on using direct readout out of weather satellites to teach values in the classroom.
Could you turn on the projector, please? Maybe somebody could turn off the lights. There exists exciting technology which could be used to improve the quality of science education in this country and in the developed nations of the world, and at the same time could be used to save lives in the developing nations of the world. I'd like to welcome you to Unionville High School. Unionville is located 35 miles southwest of Philadelphia near Wilmington, Delaware, in the state of Pennsylvania. And up until 1983, students entered the Earth and Space Science classroom, and I said, take out a book, and this is what happened. They had a lot of personality, and we had to capture that and to put it to good use. We needed a new and a better idea. And we'd been reading a lot about what was wrong with school science and how we ought to improve it. Perhaps the most famous book is Volume 3, published by the NSTA, of Harms and Yeager's research, What Research Says to the Science Teacher. And this suggests four goal clusters for all science education. Students should learn how to use science to make decisions and solve problems. Students should become informed citizens prepared to deal with science-related issues of society. Students who wish to pursue science academically should be prepared to do so. And all students, regardless of aptitude and interest, should be given the awareness of the wide scope of science and technology-related careers. We assume that overt methods to teach the spirit of science may be less effective than to expose the student to an environment which is pervaded by the spirit of science in action. We decided to track weather satellites. There are basically two kinds of weather satellites. The polar orbiters go around the Earth every hour and a half and are approximately 530 miles up. The geosynchronous or geostationary satellites are about 22,300 miles, and of course their period is 24 hours. RCA is the maker of the weather satellites, and in 1960, April 1st, launched the first weather satellite. The Astroelectronics Division in East Windsor was responsible for that first weather satellite. And you can get an idea of the scale of those weather satellites by a few of these pictures. The satellite is compacted and folded into the nose cone of an unmanned booster rocket and launched into space. There are also geostationary satellites up there. By the way, the polar orbiters, there are polar orbiters put up there by the Soviets and the Americans. The geostationary are owned by the Japanese, the Indians, the Europeans, and we have two up there. We have a few more, and sometimes they function. The European Space Agency is composed of 12 member nations, so you can see that it's not just one nation involved with that particular venture. And the weather satellites give us a great deal of information. In this particular photograph, we see three hurricanes noted. Ford Aerospace is perhaps a foremost leader in the geosynchronous satellites. They've just received the contract for GOES I, J, and K, the next three major satellites. Hughes Aircraft made the $57.5 million satellite that was blown up in mid-May. So there's Hughes, Ford Aerospace, and RCA, the three major industrial manufacturers. Ford Aerospace did make INSAT, the Indian satellite. It was launched aboard the shuttle in 1985, and it was quite a spectacular launch. And when it was unfolded in space, it looked something like this. This is the first picture received from INSAT. An interesting story about INSAT: if you're in India today, they don't ask what the weather report is, they ask what INSAT is. INSAT has become a synonym for weather in India. Also, that particular satellite is station-specific. The Indians are at war with the Pakistanis, and they don't want to share scientific knowledge. So no one else can receive science data from that particular satellite except one particular station in India. So that leads us into examining some of the political ramifications of some of these situations. There are many applications of weather satellites, including navigation and fishing and citrus and crop monitoring and ice monitoring and so on. It's normally the geostationary satellites that we see on the morning news. Well, we had a problem, though. Even though we wanted to track weather satellites, we didn't have any money. And we didn't know how to do it, and we didn't have a computer, nor did we know how to use it. This was November 1983. The money seemed to be the overwhelming problem, though, and we couldn't get our eye transferred from the money problem. But finally, after a lot of soul-searching and prayer one weekend, we decided to reorder our situation. And we decided our real problem wasn't the money so much as how to do it and to develop the credibility for the project. And we found in the process that that the satellite ground station is amazingly simple, there's minimal expense involved, and there's no formal training required for the teacher. There are basic, very simple components, include an antenna, a preamp, a receiver, and a printer, and some cables. And these can be have many parameters. There's quite a variety of parameters in this range. So we organized the class, and by the way, I didn't have the elite academically talented students. I had a cross-section of the academic community, including learning disabled, and the mainstream of society, probably. So we organized into a technical staff to read and study the literature, a public relations staff to build credibility, a finance staff to figure out how to fund the project, a computer staff to write the programs we needed, and a construction staff to go to the shop and build the project. We looked at equipment and we found out that Alden produced a dish antenna system. This is where it cost $16,000. We had a little problem. We didn't have $16,000. Now, we have been told by Alden that if we had 500 schools that wanted to buy this, colleges, high schools, whatever, the cost would come from $16,000 down to $5,000 for this particular unit. We didn't have $5,000 either. We had paper and magic markers, so we used what we could. We did what we could with what we had. And we put posters up around the school trying to advertise the weather. As we began to do our research, we found the most useful book was Joe Summers' publication by NASA, Teacher's Guide for Building and Operating a Weather Satellite Ground Station. We followed this particular schematic. We were going to use a cross Yagi array. I didn't know what that was. They didn't discuss it in math courses on arrays. Matching transformer preamps, and then we would send the signal down to a crystal receiver and into an electrostatic printer. I still didn't know what an electrostatic printer is and why a computer printer wouldn't work. We also found out in the process we needed some motors to move the antenna. We examined the GO station, and for that station we needed some much more expensive equipment. We needed a down converter as well as preamp that was very expensive. The two items together cost about $400. And then the dish is much more expensive than cross Yagi array. It runs $500 or $600 if you buy it new. Now, inasmuch as Joe Summers was located about 4 hours from Unionville, we took a group of students there to see what he was doing. And we were pleased to meet the author of the textbook we were using. We examined his equipment, and we studied it to see how he connected it, because we knew we would have to do the same shortly. We were especially intrigued by his computer programs. His students had developed a program for the Apple, which took the data from a weather satellite and put it on the screen and color enhanced it to 16 colors. We were amazed. We were astounded. So we returned to Unionville to use the talents that God had given us. And we did what we could with what we had. We read the thermometer, and we read the barometer, and we read the wind scope, which gave us the wind speed and the wind direction, which was connected to the anemometer and weather vane on the roof. And we used the sling psychrometer to tell us the relative humidity. And then 2 months after we began our project, a boy came in and said, "Miss Martin, we have a computer." No disk drive, no monitor, we had a computer. Well, we knew we were on our way, and in my mind, that was the confidence that God really was going to bless this venture. We wanted to publicize what we were doing, so we asked the school if we could put the weather reports on the PA system every morning. And shortly thereafter, we said, "We're doing it on the PA, can we do it on the radio?" And a local radio station said we might start.
And now the weather for October 31st, as predicted by Unionville High School. Here's John Zebra.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Zebra from the Unionville High School Weather Station, and I'm here with a look at today's weather. Currently, the temperature in Unionville is 52 degrees, with the winds out of the southeast at 6 miles per hour. The barometer is at 30.29 inches and falling, with the relative humidity at 80%. For today, expect increasing cloudiness with some showers towards the evening, with a high of around 58 degrees. A brief note of interest, right now the Unionville High School Weather Satellite Tracking Station is tracking Tropical Storm Juan, which can be found in the Gulf of Mexico just off the west coast of Florida. Juan should move out towards the northeast and bring us some rain for this weekend. Once again, this is John Zebra from Unionville High School, for the voice of Chester County WCLJ. Make it a great day.
We needed a monitor, and since we couldn't afford one, we talked to a local TV repairman and asked if he had an old TV that had no sound. And this is what we used for our monitor for a period of time. And then we needed a printer, so some of the students said, let's ask the chairman of the department, Mr. Kane, if he has some money left over. I had asked him. He had told me I couldn't have any. So when the students went, they said, could we have $800, Mr. Kane? He said, I will give you $400 if student council will match it. So they approached student council, and student council matched it with $400. We had $800 for our electrostatic printer. We didn't know how to take it out of the box, and we didn't know how to turn it on. Articles began to appear about us in the local newspaper. And when the West Marlboro Township heard about it, they invited us or asked us if we would call them and alert them whenever ice and snow were predicted so that they could get their cindering and salting trucks ready. Thus, the students began to realize the importance of weather information for the community. We spoke at a local Rotary Club and asked them for money. And after the presentation, one of the men came up and said, you're asking us for money. Why don't you go earn some? So we did. We sold craft kits. And from that venture, we realized about $250 profit. About that time, we became aware that legislation was pending to sell the weather satellites to the private sector. We didn't understand what that meant, so we wrote for copies of the legislation, and as the students bogged through it and tried to understand what this literature was saying, we began to realize that this was not good for our country nor for the world, and so we lobbied strongly against it. As a matter of fact, this legislation was soundly defeated with the strongest language that they have ever seen. I don't know that we did it, but at any rate. We wanted to publicize within the school what we were doing further, so one of the students spent many hours making a weather watch board for the other students to see. We needed an antenna, and so we investigated. This one from Alden cost $3,500. We didn't have $3,500. Around that time, a man came along and said, would you like a ham radio outfit? At the time, I thought we could use it for a receiver. And so I said, of course. He wanted to also buy us an antenna. The students were on the ball and said, we don't need one for the ham radio. We need one for the tracking station. Unbeknownst to me, the gentleman went out and bought us a $130 antenna. And so on May 22, 1984, we received our first satellite picture from space. We had begun with no money and no wherewithal in November of 83, and by the time the seniors graduated, we were receiving data from American and Soviet weather satellites, and in addition, we had $3,500 worth of assets. Around that time, the Home and School Association became aware of our computer needs, and they bought the rest of the computer equipment that we needed so much. The Department of Commerce does provide the predict data. And from that, we developed a program to tell us when the satellite would pass over our school. The boys further developed the program, the fellows that worked on it, and as a matter of fact, this particular program won first prize in the state of Pennsylvania in a computer competition. The first year students had begun with nothing and had done quite a job, and so before they left the school, I urged them to make a videotape to share with future generations of students the struggles they had gone through. And so this has sort of become a tradition now that the videotape is made for the succeeding class. The very next October, October 84, we were fortunate to have our congressman and our state representative come and view the station. It just so happened the same day the TV reporter came out and did a story on the station, which aired in from Philadelphia Channel. We still needed money. This time we sold thermometers, thinking that was a bit more appropriate. And we sold candy. And we opened a snack shop for students after school. And we learned to work with members of the community. And we learned to realize that our school was a composite of experts in a variety of fields, and suddenly we needed to learn the accounting skills for what we were doing in class and a variety of other schools. And so we sought out the teachers in our schools, in our school, that had these particular skills. We wondered what these satellites looked like. We'd never seen them when we'd been getting data for 6 months. So we asked for some advice from the art teacher, and we got some pictures from the Department of Commerce, and we made a model of a polar orbiting satellite. Then we wondered what the geostationary satellites were looking like. So we talked to the graphic arts teacher, and this young man worked many, many hours to make this model and did an excellent job of it. From time to time, our equipment broke down, which presented problems to be solved in a scientific manner, frustrations to be solved in a scientific manner, which meant that we needed to send people to the roof to risk their life and limb for the sake of the tracking station. But we were always happy when we looked up and saw that crossed Yagi array working properly, moving around its two axes. We needed to thank many of the people who had been so good to us, so we named a communications director. And one student practiced her typing skills as she typed these letters that were sent. We wanted to share science because science has to be shared to the community. Now, we were willing to share it with anyone that would listen, including kindergartners, so we began there. And as a matter of fact, that's turned into quite a tradition. Since November of last year, our school has given field trips to more than 500 elementary school children. We've taught them how to identify cloud types, how to use sophisticated equipment, how the antenna works, how to interpret satellite data. One little boy said as he left the room, "Thank you so much, Miss Martin. This has been the opportunity of a lifetime." Our prized possessions are the thank you notes from the kindergartners. And of course, when Hurricane Diana came along in 1984, we were able to get some pictures of it and track it, and we were very interested in the data. This particular picture was from an American satellite, and we were also intrigued with a Soviet satellite's picture of the same hurricane and comparing the two. And when our picture of Hurricane Diana was printed on the front page of the paper, we were very proud. And so we framed the press plate for our gallery. It had been 25 years since the first weather satellite had been launched, and I'm going back to 1985 now. The first one was launched April 1st, 1960. And in that time, very little has been said about them in the textbooks. And yet we were so happy that we were using them in the classroom. It had sort of skipped over every other generation in between. On the left, you can see the first picture received from the weather satellite. On the right, you can see a more recent picture received from a weather satellite. You can see how resolution has improved in those 25 years. Of course, 25th birthdays demand parties, and parties demand cakes, and so we celebrated it with a big birthday cake on April 1st, 1985. We were invited to an international weather satellite users conference, a conference composed of scientists and businessmen and government leaders from 28 different nations. 500 attended in the Baltimore area, and DuPont gave us $2,500 to attend. We were given free booth space in the exhibit area, and we were asked to make the keynote address at the academic session. So this meant part of our presentation would probably be a video. So we discussed it with the audiovisual director. And we learned how to use the equipment. And some students prepared the display for the exhibit area. And some students prepared the brochure. I have a few copies of that brochure up here today. And the students spoke of learning to use science creatively and to cooperate with each other. Perhaps the highlight of the whole convention was when this gentleman came to us and said, "I am a minister of agriculture for my nation in Africa. I came to this conference specifically to see you high school students. We need the data you have to save lives in our country. We need it to predict natural disasters, to predict pest infestation, to increase crop production. Would you folks come over and set one up for us? We can't afford what your government has, but we can afford what you have in your high school." And we became aware of the global importance of what we were doing. The developing nations cannot afford $40,000 equipment such as this. They can't afford $1,000, perhaps, for simple equipment such as we're using at the high school. Around this time, we began to start on our GO station, our geostationary satellite station. Now, I have to tell you one cute story about this situation. We needed a dish antenna. We had a very important dignitary come to the school, and one of my students had nerve that I don't have, asking you shall receive. He said, "Sir, you're a very important, influential individual. Would you give us a dish antenna for our tracking station?" We had one in 4 days. Articles continued to appear about us, and we continued to need money. This meant collecting aluminum cans and learning about land use and recycling. Of course, some of the fun came in crushing the cans. When the shuttle catastrophe occurred, we became curious as to whether it could be seen from a weather satellite. Some of the students raised the question. So we did some research, found this normal launch taken from a GOES satellite in October of this past year, 85. And then we got pictures from the Department of Commerce. This was taken about a minute or so before the launch, and this was taken right at the catastrophe. We had a catastrophe of our own, not nearly as serious, of course, but our dish blew off the roof in March. Our frustration was great, but we worked together and hammered out the problems. And we were especially pleased to have a visiting dignitary from RCA, and he came to see what we were doing in as much as RCA makes these polar orbiters. We showed him the models we had made. We explained how we were trying to interpret the data and the things that we were learning from the weather satellites. We also showed them how we were learning how to house a down converter and a preamp for the GOES station that would be temperature controlled and moisture proof on the roof. We talked about our public relations efforts. He told us how very impressed he was with what the students were doing. And then we tried to hook up our GOES station, only we had problems. So we called the local TV repairman, and he came out and showed us how we were short-circuiting in our connectors. We didn't know there was a book to tell you how to do that. So we soon found the book, and we were able to correct that problem. We since haven't found the satellite yet. That's the first thing we're going to do in September. We have to find it when it's turned on and then take a picture from it and find it. And then catastrophe of catastrophes. In late May of this year, I went in one morning, and this was what I saw where our antenna ought to be. Two seniors had decided it would be a funny act of vandalism at the end of the school year. Well, you don't steal a crossed Yagi array from 140 interested students without being caught. And within 3 days, we knew who had done it. The problem was that we had this gentleman coming from Texas A&M, and he wanted to see our station work because he was considering establishing such a station at Texas A&M. And we wanted to have a station working for him. And so we began to put our heads together and to talk to some ham radio operators in the community and try to solve the problem and get something set up so that he could see it. And it was a lot of work and a lot of frustration, but one gentleman loaned us a crossed Yagi array for that particular morning, and we did get a picture. So far we've looked at the essentials of quality education in science, the history and development of the global network of weather satellites, and we've shown you what we're doing at Unionville. Now let's talk for a moment about the potentials for the future. The students need a global awareness, a global concern for their brothers and sisters in other lands. The people in the developing nations need to know about the weather and so forth to save lives. They need to be able to predict natural disasters. They need to be able to predict pest infestation. And they need to be able to increase crop production to prevent famine. We took a look at the continent of Africa and a little bit of the Middle East, and we decided to make a little map to find out where we stood in comparison with the rest of the world. The nations in red have the capability that we have at our high school. The nations in white have more. The nations in green have less. And we were amazed. The developing nations cannot afford the expensive equipment our government uses, and our universities use for that matter. They can't afford the simple equipment we use in our high school. In the meantime, our students can learn to use this sophisticated equipment. And they can learn to solve problems. And they can learn to interpret data. And most of all, they can learn to work together to solve the problems of society. Before I leave you, I'd like to leave you with two thoughts. At first I want to mention that research says what we ought to be doing and weather satellites respond to that situation. And now I'd like to leave you with two thoughts. When you have a dream, don't let anything dim it. Keep hoping, keep trying, the sky is the limit. And remember, it's amazing what one can accomplish when one doesn't know what one can't do. Thank you. I want to mention just one thing I have here, and I don't know if you're interested or not. The brochures we made, is that mine or not? The brochures we made, I have some copies of those up here with Hurricane Diana on the cover. And I did bring a number of Joe Summers' free NASA publications. These are free, but they're out of print. If you take one, I urge you to pass it along to somebody who's really going to use an educational setting, because there is only a limited number of these available since they are out of print, and there's no intention to publish more. Any questions?
What? I had two questions. What were you supposed to be doing? and you told us at the beginning all the, you know, you had a cross section of society students. Did all the classes work on this together throughout the day? You have six or classes or something. And,
I'll start one at a time. All right. I was supposed to be teaching Earth and Space Science. Okay. And there were four units, astronomy, geology, meteorology, and oceanography. The first year we had two classes, we had 56 students. And the problem was to get the two classes to work together, even though they each met for an hour a day and they didn't meet every day of the week. And we were able to accomplish that through a classroom structure. We had class coordinators, we had directors of each of the committees, and we did other work so that to supplement, to feed in information on geology and so forth. There's a lot of geology that can be studied from these weather satellite pictures. Some people say less. I think there's a lot more. You can see meteor craters from these satellite pictures. You can look at shorelines. You can study the polar ice cap development. You can monitor weather fronts across. You can should study celestial mechanics. You can talk about electromagnetic radiation. So a lot of the, longitude and latitude, just to track a satellite. I normally taught longitude and latitude, but now I teach it so that they can track the satellite. So I'm teaching the same things, only under the guise of something else, and the students seem to enjoy it more. And then last year we had 80, and we had 3 classes. This past year we had 140, we had 4 classes in a club. This year we'll have, I'm not just sure the final count, because the numbers keep changing, but we will have 4 sections, we will have a club, and we will have a homeroom devoted to weather satellites and Earth and space science and the whole problem.
How do you evaluate your students' performance in something like that?
It's easy and it's difficult. Things show up. There's a lot of subjective evaluation, I grant you, because a lot of things show up that you can't see, you can't evaluate on a test. And a lot of the, I kind of watch them and see what they're doing, because one day the boys were tracking satellite in the back room, and they discovered the Soviets had launched a new satellite. Or they discovered that NOAA 8, which had been lost for months, had been found, or that it blew up. And these are average students and below average students arguing these problems out. And if they're actually involved in the whole process, you know, obviously that helps their grade. Also, they have certain projects and assignments they have to do. And their tests are not so much rote memory tests, but more of evaluation kinds of things and problem-solving kinds of tests. So it's a whole different problem of evaluation than you might think of in a...
At the end of the year, does every student in your class understand the whole system?
Some better than others. Some cut classes to do it, others don't. That's interesting, because that's true. The best students aren't in other classes aren't normally my best students.
Okay.
I just real one quick question. If you would like a copy of the paper, I don't have enough money to pay for a lot of copies of it, but if you would write me and send me $2, I'll be happy to send you a copy of the paper.
Thank you.